Welcome back to Directly Current. I'm your host, Max Patton. We are presented by EVs for All America. Today, I'm speaking with Dario Pagani, who's a pioneer in EV charging. He was formerly at ChargePoint. Now he works at Autel Energy. And you may not have heard of Autel. They're not as much of a name brand, but it's a very good business. They were founded in 2004 in China as an automotive scan tool company. They basically helped read diagnostics on vehicles, and at that time, all of it was essentially gas vehicles. They had a very smart pivot in 2021 into Autel Energy, where they manufacture EV charging solutions, but critically, mostly hardware. While Autel has its own software, they advertise being OCPP compliant. For my nerds out there, or I should say my non-nerds, OCPP stands for Open Charge Point Protocol. Long story short, Autel chargers interoperate with software, unlike vendors like ChargePoint where Dario used to work. That gives them a pretty flexible and nice business model. That's because they don't have to be a CPO, short for Charge Point Operator, like Dario's former employer, ChargePoint, was. The market and time has shown us that being a CPO, as nice as that is for branding and presence and impact of drivers, is a very tough business. Autel doesn't have to worry about that. And it's probably why you may have charged at an Autel charger without realizing it, because that's not part of the business model. However, those chargers are built in America. While they are a Shenzhen-founded company, they have a huge US presence since 2020, as they've expanded with a Greensboro, North Carolina manufacturing plant where they make all their chargers in the US, and they also have an energy innovation center here in California in Anaheim. So Autel is very much a global business, and trust me, Dario and I will get into tariffs and all that fun policy talk as well. But I want to understand the business better and what Dario does, so let's kick it off and hear from him.
Yeah, for sure. So I got my start in the EV charging business in 2016, and since then been involved in a couple of major players in the space like ChargePoint and Autel. I started in the ChargePoint grants and incentives marketing, moved on to leading the channel marketing organization, and then from there I transitioned to Autel in 2024, leading the marketing organization for North America.
Great. And what was it that kind of, you have a lot of hardware vendors coming in, and Autel, of course, has those North American headquarters. But what was it specifically that attracted you into this industry with EV charging and where a lot of Autel's energy is on the like level two side of it?
Yeah, when I first started in the industry, obviously in 2015, 2016, it was not a prominent goal for me professionals to get into. However, I did happen to find an opportunity with ChargePoint. I interviewed. I was fascinated by the story and the position of the company. And I was there for almost 10 years. So I guess that was a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we can just rewind and look at that history, we jump now to the ubiquity of their network and their platform. They have a very nice kind of turnkey solution for people who do operate those. And I think just about everyone listening to this program, and many people who haven't, are familiar with the experience of pulling up to one of those public stations and using them. And that's obviously been a good business for them. There are some challenges in it for sure, which I'm sure we can talk about. But if you just look at the ubiquity of it, it's clearly a game-changing thing for EV drivers.
It is. One of the things that was really fascinating to me is that when we were looking at addressable market, truly any parking lot, any business with a parking lot was a potential market and still is a potential for EV charging companies. Obviously, when I first joined the industry, there were only a few different business models available, and that were the prominent ones were either full CPO, like an EVgo or Liver Matching Firm. Or more of the enabling role of the company like ChargePoint, like Autel, where people will be looking for hardware provider, software provider, both. And then marrying that with perhaps a service provider or a service package that would serve the vital that they were going after. So I think that overall, that was one of the big wild moments for me, like looking at the opportunity and realizing that truly any parking lot is a possible customer.
Yeah, and it's huge, and especially being I believe you're based right in California, obviously early adopter EV market, for quick to realize that you've seen that evolve in lots of other markets, because I think you look at some of the most highest profile stories in EV charging. I'm thinking of things like NEVI and infrastructure to put DC charging along corridors. And yet the lived experience of most EV drivers is actually really dictated by like, where are they going to work? Where are they going for restaurants, recreation, all this kinds of stuff, because these are the alternatives they realistically have to home charging. And when you think about, not just in California, anywhere in the country, metropolitan areas, lots of folks don't have the opportunity of a home charger, whether that's a private non-commissioned charger or something that's provided by a CPO, they might not have that at all. So they're completely dependent on like where they're going, that retail experience typically, or potentially business experience to have some kind of charging for their personal vehicle.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a quantum shift in behavior for the driver, right? So we're not used from an internal combustion engine standpoint to just simply fill up on the tank you're thinking. The tank that they'll murder on your car, be like, hey, you're burning a little fuel on this. Let's just go fill up. For the charging, it's different because the old scenarios that you have, obviously, the charger and all, you're able to plug in at night, and then you should be able to take advantage of the different leap pad opportunities throughout your day. So whether you're going to a movie theater, a shopping mall, or your office, you should have opportunities to plug in for an hour or two and get a bit of charge throughout the day. For road trips, which had been the big focus on corridor charger, giving people the confidence that they could go away for the weekend, they could go out across different states and not have to worry about where to charge. Obviously, that was the big focus for corridors, and later on for NEVI. Important to remind everybody that corridor focus was present before I joined the industry in 2014, 2015. There were already corridor projects that were mostly OEM sponsors. BMW had one, Nissan had one, and they were running up and down California for the most part, and the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. And yeah, it truly was this early realization that would be necessary. And yet, as you pointed, here where we are in EV adoption, oftentimes it's that kind of localized charging that's really important. And so getting into a bit of what Autel does, I believe you guys have your North American headquarters in North Carolina, and that's become its own kind of burgeoning charging hardware and provider industry of sorts, right? We have a lot of activity there. So when you think about charging as this industry, particularly in the US, how do you think of it? Like, because I've just noticed this trend in general. You can look at like your peers in the industry, and I'm sure you guys, there's been growth in charging in the sense of whatever business model challenges there may be, whatever worries there are about consumer electrification and the pace of consumers buying EVs, the charging industry seems to have this mandate of just building. There's been a lot of building. And sometimes that building has complexities. You run into all of these local policy and utility challenges. At the same time, the rate of expansion has been pretty impressive. So what is it you think that keeps that going despite the actual uncertainties and times in the actual passenger transportation sector for cars?
Yeah, for one thing, I believe that obviously the current construction business, we may look at EV charging as obviously a high-tech business or software and all that. Reality is that we're in the construction business because we're subject to permitting and construction schedules and crews being stashed and whatnot. Moving materials and winter permitting processes is the key of what we do and our partners do in the field. I believe that the timeline is also relevant because especially when you look at DC fast charging, those projects sometimes are several months in the process. So a year in the process, we don't have the luxury of waiting for the latest and greatest auto sales data in order to decide, okay, let's just build it here tomorrow. More often than not, we have to add your best and everything. This looks to be basically on read for a whole bunch of different EV drivers within the right destination. Basically, we have to predict patterns and utilization based on data that is currently available for our sites, which is demand due to car registrations. For level two is a little easier in the sense that obviously permitting is quite as lengthy and the rollout process is a lot more nimble. That's why also when you look at yearly data, while the industry is growing at overall key growth about 20% year over year, some verticals grew 0%, some verticals grew 40%, some companies grew 0%, some helpers grew 40%. It's not all even. There are peaks and valleys in all verticals and all companies, depending on the trends or when demands the market.
Yeah, and like on that point, speaking more on the challenges in the sense of the adoption and the market being so uneven, where you've seen growth in some sectors and much slower growth in others. And then your former employer ChargePoint, of course, having some pretty well publicized issues. In some ways, this is a challenging industry, even though, yes, you're at some level in a construction and a development industry, and there is so much white space, there's still a lot of real business challenges. And so when you think about the scale, particularly at a place like Autel, a global company, right, global supply chain, and yet North America, really lucrative market that has these challenges. What are you thinking about being some of the hardest things to adapt to in the last few years? Just, I'm going to throw in the hat here, right? There is a trade war right now between the US and China, and there's been tariffs that have impacted lots of things. There's an unpredictable environment for many of these things. No single company, ChargePoint, Autel, Kempower, no one could really control that. But when you have to deal with it, like, how does that work? And how do you think that, like, how do you think that mission just basically stays present with all these headwinds?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think that the whole industry has been dealing, and beyond, obviously. It's not something that is just limited to EV charger. I think the whole industry, though, has been dealing with supply chain issues ever since COVID came to be. Obviously, during COVID, we had supply chain shortages for many components, and companies have to buy ahead of demand in order to be able to lock in pricing or ensure that they even have the parts to build the stations with. So I think we were all on the same board in that sense. When it comes to trade, and it still goes back to supply chain, though, it's still trade squabbles may happen, and then they disrupt, we have a short-term disruption on things like tariffs and whatnot, and we all seen that fluctuate month after month, especially last year. So I think that the market's kind of gotten used to that. The thing that, though it's hard to overcome, is when you are an EV charging company that does not have a lot of volume, and there's a lot of smaller players out there that they have to basically go and negotiate and try to find suppliers based on pricing that is not as favorable. Therefore, their overall cost down is a lot higher than they would hope, and it's really hard to become a profitable company. That's a very broad assessment of part of the industry, and there are companies that are larger and they have been able to command better deals and pricing for their suppliers. Until obviously we got our start in all of that diagnostic tools, so that's the core of the overall companies in all of the diagnostic tools from a bulk of business standpoint. Mm-hmm. However, be able to leverage the same supply chain allows us to have a cost down that's much more favorable than if we were to just have an EV charging company by itself. So it's overall, it's all dictated by the mass supply and demand of certain components and assemblies. And there's always so many companies that manufacture certain components or assemblies. We all have to be dealing with that kind of motion, whether we are a large company or a small company, with different levers when it comes to pricing and priority, obviously.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said about, yeah, like the diagnostics background and having a little bit more of an access to a broader supply chain than a company that's just making commodity level 2 chargers and nothing else. Like when you think about like vertical integration in general, that can come with its own challenges as well. So how do you think that's, given that like in some ways this is a commodity business and other ways there's lots of ways players find differentiation, how do you think about those kinds of trade-offs, particularly in a client-centered business where like a big part of your role, I imagine, is pitching these solutions to people who just want, they want something that works. How are you pitching them something that will be both supportable, maintainable, and be a business model that's going to be viable for you guys?
One of the biggest advantages of working with Autel is that we, anywhere from the concept to design to manufacturing, is all internal to the company. Especially when you look at level 2, you assume large commitments of hardware, to where many companies, even though they may look like manufacturers, they're simply white labeling third-party hardware. It's been more and more looks at those companies popping up, and also companies that used to be manufacturers and now have moved towards the white labeling plan. And it's mostly because making hardware at scale is not easy. Making hardware at scale is not easy. Projecting inventory is not easy. And especially when your cost down again allows you for a very slim margin every month that you keep your inventory on the shelf, that the value of the hardware is not depreciating. Therefore, your company is very liable to feel the effects of that motion. So when it comes to white labeling, it's driven by a couple of things. One is be able to have a plug and play double hardware solution that you can just tend to market very quickly. And two is that obviously it reduces your headache from a manufacturing standpoint. So we have seen many companies go that route. And the risk there is that obviously you're not going to have access more often than not to really good hardware. There may be some random white label product out there that you want to adopt that has not been tested in the market, has not been out in the market for longer than a couple of months. You don't really know what the failure rate is and what the limit product is. So it's a huge gamble regardless for the company white label and the customer purchasing that product. With Autel, everything is designed in-house, manufactured in-house, tested in-house, and we know darn what the failure rates are going to be even before we start selling the product. So peace of mind, especially if you are the reseller or the distributor, putting your name behind that channel, and you want to have a reputable product to go to market with. Same as software companies, like OCBP software companies that are relying on good hardware. They don't want to necessarily work with run-of-the-mill white label hardware that they don't know if it works 6 months down the road. And if that hardware doesn't work, obviously they're going to be right in the middle of it because they're going to be the ones people are going to call. Hey, my charger doesn't work. It's the best thing you want to say to your software company that the hardware company's problem. Then the finger pointing is starting, and that's not good for anybody.
So yeah, absolutely benefits to having that integrated. At the same time, doing the software stuff is difficult, and it may have been different. Your old employer, ChargePoint, obviously, we alluded to the CPO business being different. They had that whole side of the business. It's a little bit different where you are at Autel, and yet still there is a side of the business, I imagine, that's okay, here's the cloud management stuff. Here's the experience for smart charging, right? That's still, there still is software. There still are non-negligible investments to be had there. And that's the whole focus of some companies. So how do you think about these things being potentially integratable? And you mentioned, was it OCP was what you mentioned, right?
Yeah, OCP. Yeah.
For listeners who may not be familiar, there is this interface and language for charging and hardware and software to be able to talk to each other. And yet in some ways, that can maybe disrupt a business if you were someone like ChargePoint, where so much of your value proposition is in the software side of it. So when you think about like how it stands at Autel and the fact that you guys do have some inbuilt solutions, but you're not a CPO in the same way, how does that work?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So when you look at the three components that make up the charging solution, obviously you have the hardware, you have the software, which is both the customer facing side of things, as well as the backend station management. We set pricing, access, all of those things when you're hosting, you'll be charging at your facility or your parking lot. And then you have the service component. So what happens when a charger breaks, right? Now, who's going to come out and fix it for me? Obviously, that's not something that can be forgotten when assembling the kind of solution. There are companies that offer all three of them together, hardware, software, services, and there are three different offerings for each one with different tiers and different options. And then you have companies like Autel that prefer to go to market as a hardware first company and then be able to partner with best in class software solutions and best in class service providers. So, for instance, there's a world where we would have Autel hardware on third party software, and with yet again another company taking care of the service contract. And that's mostly because what we provide from a software standpoint obviously does not fit every use case. And we don't try to make it fit every use case. There are customers that are super happy about purchasing our software. And then we have a majority of customers that buy our hardware with a third-party software on it. And we pre-commission at a factory level. Mm. So once we get the charger, you already have the third-party software installed on it. And service providers, right? There are service providers that are very good at fleet, and service providers that are very good at commercial charge on level two. There are other ones that deal specifically with single-family residential. So it's really hard to be everything to everybody, and lots of companies have gotten in trouble by trying to do so.
Yeah,
I think that we are best when we are putting our best foot forward at what we are doing the best. And then let everybody else be the best of breed for what they're doing.
That's fair. Yeah, and focus can be huge. And as you said, lots of people are probably going to have a solution in mind they prefer. That can make sense, right? Having that more layered business strategy, especially in terms of resiliency of a business. I think that, yeah, I can see how there's benefits to that. A bit more of a wild card here. You did mention, obviously, there's the fleet commercial side of the business. We have seen in charging where there's been, like, as there's been some uncertainty about the passenger EV market, its pace of growth in the US, and no one's, I think, convinced that EVs are the future of personal transportation. At the same time, that pace is uncertain. In the meantime, you've seen many companies at every level of the stack try to pivot energy solutions for data centers, for utilities, right? For different kinds of clients. So that's, from what I've seen publicly, hasn't been a huge thing for you guys. And I imagine that comes with its own focus drift and its own challenges. How do you think about the customer base, who you are appealing to? Is there enough? Do you feel like this pond is pretty large just with the amount of white space, hotels and gas stations and places that do need charging? Or do you think that there are, like, other opportunities to leverage, given that you are a hardware first business and what right now is a pretty lucrative industry with all these power electronics?
Yes. And to be fair, I think that our focus from a hardware standpoint, where our hardware fits, it's been relatively broad, even though we offer anything from single-family residential chargers to megawatt charging, which is obviously a broad range with many denominations of power in between. Mm-hmm. So according to the latest market data, I think that we were pointed out as number one hardware of choice for multifamily residential, which is the largest category for level two charging when it comes to growth, especially over the last couple of years. And then for DC fast charger when it comes to fleet specifically. So there were two main categories we were successful first part of the year. And they're widely different, obviously. Yeah. When you look at multifamily, you look at DC charging, fleet application, they're widely different. Therefore, we do have to keep, obviously, we keep having to stretch in both different directions. Having said that, it's usually market-driven, like our approach is market-driven. We have hundreds of resellers and distributors in North America, and they are, for all intents and purposes, our go-to-market strategy. Forming those relationships and enabling these relationships is our main area of focus. So through those relationships, through one reseller, we can reach 100 customers, right? Through one distributor, we can reach thousands of electrical contractors. Mm-hmm. We don't have to touch them ourselves in order to actually have that flywheel be active.
Yeah. No.
So it's all about trusting the partnerships and making sure that they have what they need to show up to market in a competent fashion where they represent your brand and your value proposition appropriately.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what you said there makes me think of, like, utilities. I know, like, I can say firsthand in Colorado, living in a condo multi-unit complex with utility subsidies, there's for multifamily stuff like level two, let alone like DC fleet, there absolutely is a network of intermediaries and people who structure those relationships, whether it's the installers, whether it's the utilities themselves. So I can imagine that's pretty lucrative. I guess another question for you, though, on the trends there is, do you notice that is a lot of this growth still concentrated in those EV early adopter areas, like in California, there's plenty of multifamily that still needs EV charging? Or are you seeing growth that's more geographically spread in areas as there's interest and maybe a lack of infrastructure? Or is it both? Like, where, what are the trends you're seeing in terms of that growth as it's spread across the country?
Different trends. One is obviously incentive driven. Obviously, when you have incentives that are geared towards certain verticals, you're going to see it easier. You see a lower bar to clear in order to get a project done, especially from a budget standpoint. So California is currently a very heavily incentive-driven market, and that has been for a long time. We even have a new incentive coming to market for new owners mm-hmm. in California, where if you're buying a new EV or if you're buying a used EV, first time EV owner, you will get advantage of this incentive. And then there are states or regions where cost of electricity is low, and then naturally creates a transition towards electrification. It's purely economics driven. So obviously we are seeing the price of fuel across the country as skyrocketing. And while we have seen the cost of electricity stay relatively steady, or at least more predictable, you have states like Illinois, which has very favorable cost of electricity, that has seen a spike in electrification because of that factor. If you're saying that in order to fuel your school bus, you could save thousands of dollars a year by electrifying, and perhaps you can also take advantage of an incentive program to buy the bus itself. It goes without saying that a school that can save money all time can deliver areas more student path, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. That you do have in some ways two markets, right? The incentive-driven market, which absolutely does exist in certain areas, and then the economics-driven. I remember seeing there are places like Washington State where electricity has consistently been super cheap, and as we've read on all the headlines, gas has only gotten more expensive, and some of those West Coast places has always been expensive. And so, yeah, you have favorable economics, absolutely, for anyone.
Mathematics, what they want to bring up, and economics work even in places like California, where cost of electricity may not be the cheapest, but you talk to a school district. I was listening to the Starkey Unified School District, and they recently bought another 60 buses for the school district, all electric. And they have, in the first few months of the year, they already saved tens of thousands of dollars in fuel over the span of their fleet. So even in places where electricity may not be as cheap, like California, the economics still pan out.
Yeah.
It may not be as dramatic as Illinois. If you're still looking at overall cost of ownership and fuel, electric version is always going to be cheaper.
That's a great point. And it's something I know many fleet advocates have made for a while. And it's, I'd love to hear it as well on the business side. One other thing you made me think of bringing up electric school buses is I have seen stories that as there are heat waves in parts of the U.S., there have been more and more experimentation beyond a pilot phase of doing bidirectional, particularly with fleet large battery school buses. That still, to me, seems to be niche and not scale yet. And I know solutions for that are very mixed. To my knowledge, I don't think Autel has any public bidirectional DC charging solutions. However, as you think about that as a business, which is very nascent right now, what are your thoughts on that? Because to what you said about even regions like California where electricity is still very expensive, I look at that and I imagine that's opportunity, right? Because the more you can be flexible with a resource like that, the more you could just drive down the cost of ownership.
Yeah, that's totally true. And from an Autel side point of view, we did announce a 50 kilowatt bidirectional power module at CES this year.
Okay.
And we brought it up again at ACT Expo, which is a fleet-centric event, certification event. So we do have options that are coming to market later this year. Actually, the 50 kilowatt power module will be available for the end of the year. And then we have other higher power denomination option that will be available soon after that. But going back to the customer base, I believe that a lot of things is the market for bidirectional charger when it comes to school bus fleet and overall other fleet. It's not necessarily customer requirements. It has been mostly driven by the requirements. When you actually structure an incentive that gives you money for a certain checklist. So you just have to check all those boxes and just forget the money. And you only get the money for that. Obviously, people are going to try to stick with that list of requirements very closely. And they're not going to be thinking about, oh, I could add storage, or I could add solar, or I could add other things.
Yeah.
So sometimes, when the things are raised, they tend to be fairly predictive as far as the final solution is deployed.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I can see that's an area for the policy folks to drill down is, okay, should next generation incentives really focus on these value adds? Because I imagine, I'm just guessing here, but I don't think adding bidirectionality capability is going to double the cost of equipment. I don't know. Maybe it does. But it is interesting. It's great to hear that you guys do have some solutions in that space. And I'm sure there'll be more to come. Because I think the standards and the actual adoption of it, the vehicle side of it, all of that has to mature a lot. But it has been really interesting. We had on our friend Zach Wugan from the Vehicle Grid Integration Council, and he had a lot of interesting perspectives on that as well.
And then the role of storage also, obviously, is still something that we have to see at scale. There are applications and pilots out there that show the value of both bidirectional charging and storage, and how that can actually impact your overall charging costs to fleet. But again, I think we have yet to hit our stride as an industry when it comes to adoption and mass.
Yeah, exciting stuff to come. Thank you again for covering all this scope today. Any other trends you want to talk about in Autel's business that you're finding really interesting? I for one, have learned a lot already, but is there anything else we haven't covered that you think is worth bringing up for the public?
For sure. I think we're going to see an evolution. And obviously, we have had many of our level two charges going back to the level two store. That was one of the first applications that was deployed by workplace and public level two charging. Many of those chargers, a large percentage of those chargers, are coming to a point where they don't need to be replaced. And many of these chargers were initially deployed under as non-network chargers, like what we call in the industry as dumb chargers. Yep. And then they're just coming to a natural end of cycle when it comes to their hardware age. So I think that as we refresh those ports in the ground, I think we're going to optimize the consumption and the power management for those stations due to the fact that new hardware and new software is going to be far more capable. And then obviously we're going to also mitigate some of the uptime issues that are a little bit endemic to those older solutions. Consumer confidence, driver confidence in general is going to go better and better as we get those ports out and replaced with newer hardware.
Yeah, I'm sure that's...
Sorry, I will keep that. I'll keep an eye on that trend for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I will do. And selfishly, great news to hear as an EV driver, because I think it's so true that it's not a binary of, is this covered or not? Does this business have charging or not? I have been to so many subpar, especially in level two, charging experiences, even if it is a network charger, where sometimes it's a little bit of a gamble. And I imagine there's definitely an opportunity, especially on the hardware side, to get that fixed with the state-of-the-art hardware that we do have now that is finally really gone down in cost. And a lot of the stuff, as you pointed out, like initially the first incentive programs were in the late 2000s. The technology has come a long way since then. So it's exciting for me to see it come out. And I can't wait to see, of course, just the broader rollout of both level two and DC charging. Thanks so much for coming on, Dario.
Thank you, Max. Great.
And that's a wrap on Directly Current for now. We'll see you next episode with another exciting guest inside the automotive industry. We have some great stuff in the can. I can't wait. In the meantime, please do follow and subscribe where you can. We'll have the links in the description to our YouTube podcast page, etc. If you want to check out Dario's work, we have his LinkedIn linked as well. Thank you to him and his time, as well as his handlers at Autel for being so nice and letting us talk a lot of shop, nerdiness, and behind the scenes here. Really appreciated it, and I can't wait to see you next time on Directly Current. Also, you can check out the website for EVs for All America, linked in the description, to see the great lobbying work we've done. Quick update on that, we have now implemented, or I should say California's governor has signed, the EV tax credit, which is returned for the state, and it's a big deal. We've talked about it in prior episodes, but 13 automakers have actually already signed on, and you'll see that implemented at dealers, new and used, if you're buying a Rivian, Lucid, GM vehicle, and many others. Super exciting stuff. Can't wait to see that progress and impact from it, and I hope other states follow the lead that California has reasserted. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again on Directly Current.